I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to have an interview with Ed Connors from Gold's Gym, and he is going to be joined by one of his partners, Tim Kimber, who was two of the three partners that Ed had. The other one was Pete Kromkowski, and those three guys were the ones that owned Gold's Gym. They bought it from Ken Sprague, and they really made it famous by franchising it and making it a huge building out in the Venice, California area where it still resides. And so it's going to be a really interesting interview with both Tim Kimber and Ed Connors as we talk about how they got into owning Gold's Gym and how they were able to grow it so much. And we also talk about how the women bodybuilders started training there at that time and the Mecca and the atmosphere that was Gold's Gym back in the 1980s. And we also talk about how Hollywood just loved the bodybuilders back in the late 70s, early 80s. It was really an amazing time in bodybuilding. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right, we got some really bad news today in the world of bodybuilding. Dave Draper, the Blonde Bomber himself, passed away today. On November 30th, 2021, Dave was 79 years old. He was a real legend in the world of bodybuilding. He was at his peak in the 1960s. Dave actually used to work for, he's from New Jersey originally, and he used to work for Joe Weider's warehouse when Joe Weider owned Weider's Barbell, because Dave was such a great bodybuilder. He just loved bodybuilding. So Joe Weider had the warehouse in Union City, New Jersey, and at 21 years old, Dave would work there, and he would actually work out with Leroy Colbert, who was the great bodybuilder from the East Coast, who had one of the first guys to have 20-inch arms. And Joe Weider started to recognize the potential in Dave and started featuring in his Muscle Builder magazines. And Dave won the IFBB Mr. New Jersey when he was only 21 years old. So in 1964, Dave relocated to Santa Monica, California, because Joe Weider moved his offices out there. And he was working for Joe out there, and he started training at Muscle Beach, the original Muscle Beach, not the one that's out there in Venice. This was in Santa Monica, and it was underneath the pier. And he trained with Zabel Kwazuski and Hugo Labra, Steve Nice, all these great early bodybuilders. And then the city of Santa Monica shut the beach down, or shut the their gym down for some reason. And Joe Gold opened up the original Gold's Gym in 1965. And that was one of the reasons he opened it up, was because they had no place to train because Santa Monica closed down the gym on the beach. So Dave actually competed in the very first Mr. Olympia contest. Actually, it wasn't the Mr. Olympia, it was the Mr. America, but it was held with the Mr. Olympia that night. And Dave won the Mr. America contest. He beat out Chet Yorton. If you're on my YouTube page, I have a bodybuilding history section. And I talk about the 1965 Mr. Olympia, and I also talk about the America contest where Dave beat out Chet Yorton that year. And then the next year, Dave came back to that competition, and he won the Mr. Universe. So he was a great bodybuilder in the mid-1960s, and he was extremely famous because Joe Weider used to feature him on the magazines all the time. Him and Larry Scott were probably the two most famous bodybuilders in the world back then. And actually, he was an inspiration for Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was at the time living in Austria. And Arnold used to hang Dave's pictures on his wall, and he wanted to be like Dave Draper. And then Dave got into the movies and television in 1967. He signed a contract with MGM Studios, and he was featured in the Monkees TV show and also the Beverly Hillbillies TV show. And he was really a real famous bodybuilder at the time. There was no one getting that much publicity or in that much TV or movie roles. And then Dave was in the movie Don't Make Waves, which was the famous movie with Sharon Tate. And it also featured Tony Curtis and Claudia Cardinale. And Sharon Tate, of course, was the wife of director Roman Polanski. And she was famously, or infamously, I should say, killed by the Manson family in 1968 when they invaded her home and she was pregnant and they tragically killed her. What a tragedy that was, because she was so beautiful and had such a rising career in Hollywood. The story of Sharon Tate was featured in the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was the Quentin Tarantino movie that came out a couple of years ago. Dave was really, really famous. And then he competed in the very first, or he competed in the 1967 Mr. Olympia, but he only took fourth place out of four guys because I think his television and movie career was starting to interfere with his training. And he didn't compete again for a few more years. And then in 1970, Dave entered the NABBA Mr. Universe contest in London. And that was Arnold Schwarzenegger's last NABBA Mr. Universe win. And Dave was in third place in the tall class behind Arnold and Reg Park. And a lot of people thought Dave should have beat Reg Park at that show. And then Dave was one of the ones who joined Arnold and Franco and Boyer Coe. And the four of them took the plane over from London, England, over to Columbus the next day. So they all competed in the AAU Mr. World contest that Jim Lorimer promoted. And Jim, of course, arranged that flight. And Arnold went on to beat Sergio Oliva in that contest. And Dave was in third place in that contest. And then I believe Boyer was second to Franco in the short class. So that was a very historic event. It took place on Wide World of Sports, covered it. And that was, of course, the first time that Arnold ever beat Sergio. And then only a couple of weeks later, Dave was part of the Mr. Olympia competition that took place in New York. And that was the contest where Arnold beat Sergio for the first time at the 1970 Mr. Olympia. Dave competed in the Mr. World contest that night. And he beat out Rick Wayne, who won the medium class, and Franco, who won the short class. And both of those guys were in excellent shape. So that was a really big win for Dave Draper. And then that was Dave's last show. And Dave was never really comfortable competing in the spotlight. He didn't like the publicity. He, you know, for a guy who was so famous in the bodybuilding world and was achieved a lot of fame in movies and television, it's kind of weird that he was so shy. He really didn't like the spotlight. He was totally the opposite of Arnold. So Dave got into making furniture, and he would take the wood from the Santa Monica Pier, and he would build beds and couches and all kinds of furniture. In fact, Arnold had a lot of his furniture in his house. If you ever see pictures of Arnold from the late 70s, if you look at his bed, it's like it's a wooden bed on the outside of it, the frame of it. And that was built by Dave Draper. And then Dave went through a really tough period in his life where he started drinking a lot. He smoked pot, and he was really a bad alcoholic for many, many years. And then he finally got over it, and he met his wife, Laurie, and she really kind of saved Dave. And she recognized the potential that he had and how famous he was still as a bodybuilder. And so she helped him sort of realize his potential by telling him to get into writing, which Dave loved to do. And Dave was a fantastic writer. And they started selling some paraphernalia about Dave. And then they got into the gym business, and they opened up a world gym, I believe, in Santa Cruz. I remember when they had the grand opening of that. Arnold was there, and Joe Gold was there, and Lou Ferrigno, and I think Clint Eastwood was even there. So it was a really big star-studded event. Dave wrote, I believe, four books. Brother Iron, Sister Steel, I think, was his most famous book. He also wrote Iron on My Mind. That was another one. And when I interviewed Peter McGough right before he died, I asked Peter about who his famous writers were. And he said Dave Draper was the best writer in the bodybuilding world because he said Dave really wrote with his soul. And he was a very sensitive person, a real artist, and he really put it all on the page. So if you guys are ever interested in reading some of Dave's books, you can get them on Amazon. And he was inducted into the Joe Weider Hall of Fame in the year 2000. And he was just a beloved person in the bodybuilding world, not only for his physique and for the inspiration that he brought to everybody when he was younger and in the 1960s, but also in his later years because he was just such a kind man. He was so giving, very much like Bill Pearl and Boyer Coe, you know, just a real class act. And I tried for many, many years to get him on my podcast, and I'm really sad we never got a chance to talk to him because I'm sure he had so many great stories because he grew up, he was around during that seminal point in bodybuilding in the 1960s and the 1970s. And he was a training partner of Arnold, and he trained at Gold's Gym with all those guys. But Dave was just so painfully shy. He just did not want to do an interview. His wife, Larie, told me several times, no, Dave will not do any interviews. In fact, he didn't even come around anymore. He didn't make any appearances or anything. I think the last time I saw him was at the 2004 or 2005 Mr. Olympia. I'm sorry, the Arnold Classic. And Dave was there. And my book came out that year, the natural bodybuilding book that I did with Human Kinetics. And he was very supportive of the book. And just really tried to give me some support on that. So you could just tell Dave was just such a great person. And we're so sad to see him go. But he did live a full life, 79. And I guess he was suffering many, many years, the last few years, with heart problems. So now he's in peace, and he won't have to go through any pain anymore. But we will always, of course, remember Dave Draper because he was such a fantastic bodybuilder and such a fantastic man. So at the end of our interview today with Tim Kimber and Ed Connors, I'm going to read an article, and this is from the August-September issue, 1980 issue of Iron Man magazine. It was written by Howard Alpert, and it was a seminar that Dave Draper gave. So I was looking back at some of my old magazines. I knew I had at least one magazine where they were talking about Dave Draper. So I'm going to read this article. It says, "You Are Dave Draper" is the title. So stay tuned after we get done with our interview with Tim Kimber and Ed Connors, and I'm going to read this article. All right, so we didn't get any emails from last week's show. We are back on track, hopefully, every week. Sorry for that layoff we had for a month, but we are back on track. So I hope you guys are listening. And send me some emails if you want at naturalolympia@gmail.com. But without any further ado, here is our interview with Ed Connors and Tim Kimber, where we talk about Gold's Gym starting up in the 1980s when they bought it from Ken Sprague. And they moved it from Santa Monica back to Venice. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have two very special guests with me today. We have Mr. Ed Connors, who was one of the owners of Gold's Gym when it really got going and they franchised it out in California. And then we also have one of the other owners, Tim Kimber, who is also joining us today. So we could tell some stories about the good old days of Gold's Gym. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi, John.
Hello,
Hi,
Ed. Hi, Tim.
Well, it's good to have you guys together.
Thank you. It's good to see my old partner.
Yeah, yeah. When's the last time you guys saw each other?
Well, geez, I don't know. You a couple
of years ago?
10 years?
Oh, really? It's been that long, huh? Okay, cool. Yeah,
we communicate every month or so, but
okay.
I don't think I've seen Tim in a long time.
Wow. All right. That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, Ed, before we get started, tell us about your book. I know we had you on the podcast before and you were talking about working on a book. So now you said it's about to be released in January, huh?
Well, I have a publisher that has given me a deadline of January 1st. So I'm hoping that things will be good enough for him to go ahead and publish in January. That's the goal anyway.
Okay. So you said this book before when I had you, we were talking about all the guests you had over at your house and mm-hmm. all the guys that you helped get started in bodybuilding and in the wrestling world by being one of the owners of Gold's Gym. So is that a big part of the book, of all the guests you had?
Well, ironically, when I started writing, I broke the book up into four sections for ease of printing. Mm-hmm. And the first part is a general overview of the fitness industry and how it developed in America. And then my second part is regards to my house guests over the years. And the third part is on it, which is now the biggest part, is the management of Gold's Gym, because I think, you know, Pete, Tim and I, in our own strange way, we're a great team in terms of, you know, creating the Gold's Gym and what it became.
Yeah.
And I think this story needs to be told, because I think especially American business, thanks to people like Jack Welch, G, there's just so much emphasis on a strong CEO. And I think what Silicon Valley has proven with the dot-com businesses, is that it takes a team. Even something like Elon Musk, and I mean, he hires a lot of great people that make him allow him to do what he does. And I think Pete, Tim, and I were not afraid to hire people that were smarter, better, worked harder than we did, and we let them do their thing, and it worked out great.
Okay.
And also, I think people too don't realize that it was my house guests who I really believe helped make Gold's Gym the Mecca and the biggest gym chain in the world, because you forget that the magazines were the social media of the day.
Yeah.
And Gold's, most of these magazines didn't pay the photographers to travel to contests or give them any kind of business expense. The athletes had to come to the Mecca, and we were happy to provide, you know, a place to train, and in some cases a place to live. And they helped make the gym famous. I mean, for yeah, 20, sure. 25 years we were involved, that they were it.
Yeah.
No, it was, Tim says, I should let Tim talk, but Tim said, we were family. And that's, I think, that's an important part of my book.
Okay. Hey, Tim, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into bodybuilding originally, and how you ended up owning Gold's Gym with Ed and with Pete Kromkowski.
How detailed do you want me to go?
Go into detail.
Well, I go back to 1976, I believe it was.
Okay.
I competed in the Mr. Rochester contest. That was natural. And I forgot now. I didn't do very well. I think I came in third out of three. I used to work at Kodak, Eastman Kodak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had a decent build, but, you know, it was obviously I was working out, but I wasn't big by any means. And I walked around the plant and knew a lot of people. And then one day a guy said, "Hey, Tim, there's a guy bigger than you over in Department 8. I went, "What?" So I had all, you know, magazines and stuff. And of course, Arnold was my original inspiration.
Yeah.
And I went over to Department 8 and I saw this guy immediately sitting in his chair. He was an inspector inspecting carts. And his arms were out through his sleeves, which were slit. And I was, "Oh my God." And I went right over to him and I said, "Hi, how did you get that big?" And he said, "Steroids." And I went, "Okay, I'm in." I'm in. And there's living proof right here that there's somebody that's taking them. And I can see what it's done. And I went, "Okay." I wanted to keep competing. Yeah. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to compete without them.
Yeah.
At least I wasn't going to be able to compete without them. There are probably those who can, but I wasn't one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, "Well, now how do I get them?" He said, "Pete Kromkowski. You got to meet Pete Kromkowski. He's bouncing over at this nightclub." So I grabbed two of my buddies and I went over to this nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
And that Friday. And there was Pete, and I'd of course seen him in the magazines.
Yeah,
and recognized him immediately. He was standing at the front door in his tuxedo as a bouncer, and I walked up and I said, "Mr. Kromkowski?" He said, "Yes." I said, "I'm interested in getting big, and I was told you could help me." And he put his hand on my shoulder and says, "I think I can help you, little fellow." So. Lo and behold, he lived two blocks from where I was living in a buddy's house.
No kidding. Wow.
So my buddies left me at the club with Pete that night, and Pete took me home.
Hmm.
And I got my first injection and my first orals.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that started me off on my steroids. And then Pete and I were like brothers. We hung out together. He was teaching me everything, you know, how to work out, you know, and all that stuff. And so in 1978, I competed in Mr. Empire State and I won. And so I was hooked. And again, I was still working at Kodak, and I had just completed, my apprenticeship in tool and die work at Kodak, 4-year program. Like 2 weeks later, Pete calls me up and he says, right after I won the contest, maybe a couple weeks after. And he says, Timmy, I need a partner, and I got a chance to buy Gold's Gym, and I need a couple partners. Mm-hmm. And are you interested? And I went, whoa, yes, I am. Because I'm thinking I wanted to train for Mr. America. That was my next goal, was Mr. America.
Okay.
And of course, I was thinking big. he said, well, yeah. And I said, well, how much do I need? And he says, you need, I think it was $25,000.
Okay.
And the price of the gym, I think, was $100,000, Ed, plus liabilities accepted.
Yes, that's exactly right.
From the equipment companies. So, I called my dad up and I says, Dad, I need $25,000 to buy into Gold's Gym. And he's like, what? No gym's worth $100,000. Yeah. and I don't have the money anyway. So sorry. So I had to call Pete back up and I says, Pete, I can't do it financially, but can I come work for you? And he says, absolutely. So I had just gotten married in October, the week after I won the Empire State. I got married.
Okay.
And so we're now talking December-ish, I think.
Okay.
And so we just bought a house. So I go home and I tell my wife, we're moving to California. We list our house. We sell it. And we were back in California May 3rd.
Wow. Okay.
No, March. Was it March? I think it was March. They had just bought... So interesting enough, since I can't participate in the purchase, he gets Ed and a guy named Denny Doyle to take my place.
Okay.
So we sell our house, move out to California, and I'm, because of my machining background, I'm fixing the equipment in the gym. I'm sweeping the floors.
Okay.
I'm selling memberships at the front desk. And Denny had taken over as manager of the club. And so Pete had just won Mr. World in 77.
Yeah.
And so I think at the time he was the reigning Mr. World because they didn't do the next 2 years, I think.
Okay. That was in Acapulco, right? Acapulco, Mexico.
Yeah. Good memory. So Denny's managing the gym. So one day, Pete calls me up and he says, Timmy, don't we have a seated blue calf machine in the back of the gym? And I went, yeah, we do. He says, now it was one of the Gold's Gym that we made our own equipment. And it was actually one of ours. So it was pretty obvious the way it was manufactured. It was Gold's Gym.
Yeah.
So I go in the back of the gym. And I go, what? The machine's gone. So I went back on the phone. I says, Pete, it's not here. He goes, son of a bitch, and so and so. He goes, I want a meeting with Ed and Denny right now. Okay. So I call Ed and Denny up and I said, okay, guys, Pete wants to have a meeting. So they all came in, Pete came in, and lo and behold, Pete traveling the world, doing seminars and exhibitions as Mr. World, saw the seated calf machine in a gym up the coast.
No way.
Yeah. And I think he had a really good suspicion how that happened. So Denny, I won't say anything more other than Denny decides to sell his shares of stock out of the gym. Because apparently that machine was sold for $100 to that gym up the coast.
Oh, man.
Out the back door. So Denny then decides to sell his shares in the business.
Okay.
So now I have some money from selling my house.
Yeah.
And my mother-in-law offers to loan us some money as well. So we were then able to buy Denny's stock out.
Okay.
However, and Ed can attest to this, Pete then decides that rather than just, we're going to double Denny his money and Pete's going to take half the stock. So okay. He then becomes major shareholder because they were a third, Ed, correct?
Yeah, I don't really remember that. So
yeah, you were third. So Pete then took another half of the third, and he then became 51% or 54%, whatever it was, he became major stockholder.
53%.
Yeah, and we got to buy in and at that time. So that is how the three of us got together.
Wow. And Ed, you're the one
from my side.
Yeah. Ed, you're the one who told Pete to move to California, right? From Rochester. Well, or you were in Florida, I think, right? Orlando?
Actually, I was interviewing with Disney to work on Epcot. I'm also an architect, as you know. And I went over to see a friend that was working out at Orange Avenue Gym in Orlando. And Pete Grimkowski was there, and he was the biggest guy I'd ever seen. And I'd also come from an interview out in L.A., and I said, you know, you belong out there. You should, you know, you should come out and train for Weider's Mr. World. And he said, I'd love to, but I have no car. I'm going through divorce, no money. So I said, well, if I take the job out there, I'll fly you out and you can stay with me until you get on your feet.
Yeah.
So Pete became, you know, one of my first house guests or my first house guest. And we stayed in touch. And then one day he called me up and said, Gold's Gym is for sale. Are you interested? And I thought I was going to be one of, you know, quite a few investors, but I had gone in the gym when I first saw it. And I thought, God, this would be neat to own it. I had a, as I write in my book, I really believe in the power of positive thinking. Mm-hmm. I just conceptually thought it would be great because my first experience joining a gym when I was in school at Berkeley was very unpleasant. And I, in the back of my mind, I thought, if I ever have a chance to change this, I will. Because, you know, back in the day, they essentially kind of locked you in a room and sold you a very expensive membership. And Gold's Gym really transformed the way I started charging $19 a month with my first gym in 1980. And that there are still gyms charging that, you know, at 40 years later.
Yeah.
So, you know, we transformed the industry. And I think Tim mentions that he had seen Pete in the magazine. So there's a good example of the power of the media back then. He knew who Pete was. You know, Pete's motto was think big. And, you know, we were, you know, that's the way we thought. Pete, you know, was traveling the world and realized not everybody can come to the Mecca. So we would bring the Mecca to the people with a form of a gym license or franchise.
Yeah. Tim, when you were talking to Pete and he told you to come out there, you obviously knew about Gold's Gym, right? You knew because it was the Mecca back then in the 70s.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'd seen Pumping Iron probably a million times already by then. And knew that was the place that the champions trained at.
Yeah.
And I can remember the first time, and it already just brought goosebumps back to my arms. I remember the first time walking in that door, just being amazed and just in awe. And I could, again, the goosebumps are flying. I could just feel it. It was just for me. Unfortunately, I never competed again, or fortunately, whatever.
Yeah. But
it was just an amazing, amazing place.
And John, see, Tim brings up a very good point. Again, that when we bought the gym, it was on 2nd Street in Santa Monica. It was 90 feet by 50 feet. So it was 4,500 square foot gym. You know, and it's hard for people to understand that was the Mecca. Nowadays, that's nothing in square footage. But back then, it was huge. I mean, Arnold had to go from Graz, Austria to Venice, California to get a workout in 1968 because there was nothing like Gold's Gym.
Yeah. What year did they move it to Santa Monica, Ed? I know I asked you about this before.
1977.
77, okay. And then what year did you guys go back to Venice in the bigger building?
1981.
February, yep.
Yeah, okay. Tim engineered that. Tim should tell you the story about how he engineered the move. It's in my book, but it was a brilliant. Tim was brilliant at negotiating.
And, it was just luck. It was desperation and luck.
What happened? How did that happen, Tim?
Well, heart to heart, I had made the movie The Hustle of Muscle Beach back in late 79.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Early 80. So, but we were getting casting calls daily for commercials. They're looking for bodybuilders, females, males. I mean, we were getting all the calls. And one of the calls came in was the show Heart to Heart.
Yeah.
And they were looking for a gym to shoot in. And they wanted to shoot in Gold's Gym. So at the time we were getting, it feels like $500 for a day to let somebody come in and shoot. But these guys wanted to come in and take over the gym. So they wanted us to shut it down.
How long did they want to do that for?
Well, that's their downfall that they had. Because I think they booked like 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
But the interesting part of this was that we were actually moving to Venice in a few days.
Okay.
When they came in to shoot. So as best as I recall, but I do have the contracts. So if needed be, I could ever pull them back out. But as best as I recall, they contracted us for 2 days edit, and I charged them $2,500 for a day. So it was like $5,000, and we had to shut the gym down for 2 days. So the first day of shooting, Robert Wagner, this is Heart to Heart with Stephanie Powers and Robert Wagner.
Yeah.
And Robert hurts his back. So under contract, they're obligated to pay for the 2 days. But, again, the gym was shut down. We put signs up closed.
Wow.
So they're paying us the $5,000. So then they have to obviously come back and shoot. And I'm thinking, and we've got champion bodybuilders, champion athletes, actors and actresses. And I, you know, I felt the pinch, yeah, you know, from our members, that an obligation to our members, really, that we needed to be open.
Yeah.
But we also needed the money because of the move. We were, you know, spending a ton of money. Help me, Ed, too, if I'm misspeaking, but to make the move happen. So I think they contract another day. And I said $5,000 for the day. And I said, you guys are killing me, because I've got to tell our members we're not open.
Yeah.
And these people, you know, expect us to be open. They need us open. And so they pay it. They walk right back in with a check. And but now we got to move. And I tell them, you know, look, we're moving, changing locations. They said, no problem. We can make that work.
Oh, wow.
And actually, we will move you in our trucks.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. So they loaded up the gym in their trucks.
Holy cow.
And moved us to the Venice location, which is still in main room today.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
I'm also in this show as an actor.
Yeah.
Right. Frank Zane is the male, the bodybuilding lead. And I've got a little part in it as well. So I'm caught, you know, with all this stuff. So to make a long story short, because I'm not remembering all the exact pieces, they book us again. Robert hurts his back. He can't do it. They've booked it. They come back for another day. And I said, I just kept doubling the day. And I said, $12,500 for the next day. But I don't know why they weren't booking more days, because it was obvious they weren't going to get this done in a day, right, or 2 days.
Right.
So they come back for another day. And I said, $25,000. I know they have it already in the can. They have nowhere to go.
Right.
Right, for continuity, film continuity. They can't go somewhere else. I said, $25,000. We ended up getting $65,000.
Holy shit.
Total for the location shoot. And Robert Wagner comes up to me afterwards. He says, Tim, I got to shake your hand. That's the most we've ever paid for a location in our lives. And I said, well, thank you, Robert. You probably saved us.
Yeah. So it went from $5,000 and ended up being $65,000.
$65,000 we got and moved.
Yeah.
And we got a collection of fake weight plates, which were invaluable in the
many photo shoots. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that cool? What year was that, Tim, that they did that?
81.
They moved in February of 81. Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that crazy how bodybuilding was so popular back then? Like the media loved it, the Hollywood, the TV shows. And it's just when you look at how bodybuilding is today, how it's thought of in the main press, you know, in the general public, it's just amazing how they were so fascinated with bodybuilding back then.
We were getting so many calls a day that because I was now managing the gym, because when Denny left, I became the manager.
Yeah.
And I couldn't take all the calls that we were getting. So I told Pete and Ed, I said, guys, I need help with these, just handling these calls. Because we were getting a lot of exposure, obviously, from all these photo shoots and commercials and stuff.
TV shows, but, yeah.
So that's how we got Derek Barton. I had met Derek in a softball game, celebrity softball games, up at Fairfax High.
Okay.
And I don't know what made me think that he would be good at this, but he was amazing at it, obviously. As time will tell, through the next 20 some plus years, that Derek just went through the company and became our advertising coordinator and marketing genius. And it was because of these casting calls, we brought him in and start the motion picture and television division of Gold's Gym.
Wow.
And the rest is history. I mean, what a job he did. Yeah.
Why do you guys think that was, that Hollywood was so fascinated with bodybuilding? Was it just because bodybuilding was a new thing to the general public and there weren't that many gyms around?
What do you think, Ed?
Well, I think Arnold changed Hollywood's perception of bodybuilders. I think up until Arnold, people thought, the entertainment industry thought bodybuilders were hard to work with. Mm. And I think Arnold charmed them. As you write in, you know, write in my book, there was a lot of stuff happening in the late 70s that sort of suddenly fitness was a new thing.
Yeah.
I could rattle off a dozen things that were going on. I mean, Jane Fonda started her aerobic studio and tapes, and Time magazine, you know, highlighted the bodybuilding world, Rolling Stone magazine, John Travolta in the movie. It was just a lot going on. The running book came out. Boyd Epley, back at the University of Nebraska, former Miss Nebraska, you know, started putting weight training on the Nebraska football agenda and transformed the way colleges thought about weight training for football or baseball or basketball. So, no, it was the 79 was not only the year that Pete, Tim and I were the owners of Gold's Gym, but it was the beginning of an incredible change in America regarding the culture and the perception of fitness.
And Louis was doing the Hulk.
Yeah. I mentioned that in my book. Again, that was just another touchstone. You know, the first Superman movie came out, and the Hulk, Jake Steinfeld was on CNN, Body by Jake. So all these things were happening. So that the timing, as I write in my book, life, I think, is half about luck and the other half is what you do with it. And we were, Pete, Tim and I were there at the right time. We got lucky, but we worked very hard and were open minded, I think, to what was going on. There's an NPR show, Guy Raz, called How I Built This. And he always asks his people he's being interviewed, how much of this do you attribute your life to luck? And they typically say 50%. And we were all, Pete was lucky to meet me, but I was lucky to meet him. I was lucky to have Tim as a partner because I could not have done it alone. And, Tim brought in people like Derek. Derek reminded me, Tim, the other day that we charged an additional $100 a year to a member to be part of the motion picture and tea. I had forgotten that. But, someone like Rick Valenti, he told me he got 47 gigs from that membership.
Yeah.
He's probably still living off residuals, or that changed his life. Yeah. So, but people wanted to be associated with health and fitness back. This is the beginning of AIDS. And so Weider would get celebrities to be on the cover of his magazines. And Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, but we never paid anyone to endorse Gold's Gym. Is that right?
Correct. No.
Yeah.
we gave sportswear away, if you said, but there was never any money exchanged.
People wanted to be associated with health and fitness.
Yeah.
It was a new big thing.
They did an episode on The Incredible Hulk about competing, right? Didn't they have, and then Louis was in the contest, I think. I thought like Louis and Samir Banood, and I thought they did could an episode. Been. Yeah.
It could have been, I don't recall.
And then I think they did on the streets of San Francisco too. Remember when Arnold was in that one? That was in the late 70s, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It just seems like I got into bodybuilding, I think in 76, 77. And I remember when I got into it, I was a little kid. And all my teachers and relatives were like, this is the weirdest sport ever. You know, you don't want to do this sport. And then I saw a change like after pumping iron where everybody became fascinated with muscles.
Yeah.
I don't think people knew anything about building muscles or anything. And then it just kind of like came into the limelight. And it seemed like the media in general was just so fascinated with bodybuilding. It was really kind of like the beginning of the golden age, which then went into the 1980s, as you said, Ed.
I think you're right. I mean, George Butler, who recently died a few months ago, who was the director of Pumping Iron, Arnold gave him a very nice tribute on Instagram or Facebook. And he, I really believe that that was the catalyst that changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because the movie was seen nationally. And as Tim mentioned, I mean, he saw it many times. It became kind of a cult classic.
Oh, yeah.
And at the same time, Tim, you could talk a little bit about this, but at the same time that the movie was coming out, Pete Grimkowski engineered the breakaway from the AU of the NPC. And so this sort of started the whole rash of bodybuilding contests all over the country, because up until then, the AU would have the bodybuilding sort of as an afterthought after the weightlifting. And Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, but most of the time, I think the bodybuilding contests were after midnight, you know, with a spotlight hooked to a basketball hoop.
Basketball net, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was ridiculous. You know, what's his name? Bob Hoffman didn't care. And but Pete was in a famous meeting, I think, in our gym and on Second Street with Ben Weider and Jim Mannion and others.
Ken Sprague.
Yeah, where Ben Weider said that if you'll form your own association, we'll give you exclusive coverage in our magazines, and the die was cast. So, but then there was this explosion of bodybuilding contests all over the country. I mean, you know, there were teenage contests back then where they'd have 60 competitors.
Yeah, that was happening in Chicago, where I was from, because I was
nowadays
in the early 80s. Yeah.
Nowadays, there are more trophies than competitors.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think teenage bodybuilding even exists. You're lucky if you get one or two. But yeah, I went through the same thing.
I'm sure it's one of the many categories. I mean, I write in my book that the NPC gave out 619 pro cards last year versus in the old days. I mean, they only gave out a couple pro cards a show and that three times a year.
Yeah.
So it's a different world. And John, to your comment about it's a changed environment, I just saw some stuff on Instagram where the majority of respondents said that they prefer, say, Chris Bumstead's physique to the big pros on the Olympia stage. And I think we're coming full circle.
Yeah.
Again, the past is sort of good again, and people want that look back of the golden age.
Yeah. Yeah. I
and
agree.
Actually, ironically, the same thing is happening with the gyms. The big box gyms, the bigger Gold's gyms or Lifetime Fitness or 24-hour LA Fitness, they're kind of in trouble now post-pandemic at 35,000 square feet or 100,000 if they're Lifetime. It's just too big. People aren't going back to the gyms right now. So ironically, a smaller gym like what we started with in the 80s seems to be the way to go right now.
How much do you think it was Joe Weider's magazines that helped really fuel bodybuilding and the interest in bodybuilding?
Oh, it was huge. I write in my book that I would stand in the lobby sometimes of a Gold's Gym in Venice. I'd ask people why they were there. And, you know, some people would say, oh, you know, I saw Arnold in a movie, or I saw Lou in The Hulk or The Ultimate Warrior. But mostly it was because of a Weider cover or, you know, Weider magazine.
Yeah.
And so, no, that Weider's magazines, people don't realize it. But they weren't all over the world in, I think, 36 different languages.
Yeah.
three alone in India, where there are now 100 Gold's Gyms. You know, how does that happen? Well, thanks to Joe Weider's magazine.
Yeah. His,
people forget, but, you know, back in the day, Shape Magazine and Muscle and Fitness were in the top 10 in all American magazine sales. You could probably go to a supermarket and there would be Muscle Fitness at the checkout stand.
Yeah.
You try and find a magazine today. No, it's a different world.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I think created a lot of our interest when we were kids, you know, and Tim, you could probably relate to this too, is when you were young, it was those Weider magazines that really got you excited about bodybuilding.
Totally, totally. But I bought every magazine I get my hand on.
Me too.
Remember the little ones from England or something? And I forgot the name, but there was a little one, always a black and white cover. And
Tomorrow's Man.
Yeah.
Oh, Tomorrow's Man. Yeah, there was. I get my hands on Hoffman's.
I have one. I'll dig it out.
Oh my! I'm sure you would do it.
And those little Iron Man ones. Remember those with the small?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I loved all of them. It didn't matter. Just any picture I get my hands on.
Yeah.
It was inspiring, but yeah, for sure.
And it's funny how you talk about luck and then being prepared for it, or like it's almost like fate. I remember when Arnold tried to get into the movies in the late 70s and they were all against him. All the agents in Hollywood were like, you know, you're too big. The actors today are like Woody Allen and Dustin Hoffman and, you know, the smaller guys. And they said, you just don't fit in. And then the 1980s came along and that's when the explosion and exercise and muscles came along. And then he fit right in perfectly with that. And that was the Reagan era. And that's when they started all those action movies. And then everybody had muscles in the movies, you know. Even like Bruce Willis had a muscular physique and, you know, Van Damme and, of course, Stallone, you know. So it was like that was the era. And he was just poised perfectly for that era right when he got into acting.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned that in my book, the Reagan era, which was an incredible economic engine, was when we had our growth. So that ushered in an incredible. Well, the entire time we own the gym, we benefited from an amazing American economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about women's bodybuilding, because that started right around 1982. That's when they had the first.
No, it started earlier. We actually held the first women's bodybuilding contest in 1979.
No kidding. What was the name of that?
Women's Bodybuilding Championships.
Okay.
Lisa Lyons won.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She was dating Pete Gronkowski then, wasn't she, Tim?
Well, I guess you could say that.
And that you guys held it out there in California?
We had it at Santa Monica Civic Auditorium. We actually sold out the auditorium, 3,000 seats.
Unbelievable. Crazy.
We weren't greedy about tickets prices, and we didn't charge the competitors, you know.
Never charge the competitors any contest.
Really? Unbelievable.
Now they're paying $300, aren't they, John?
Generally? Oh, yeah, for national shows, for sure, yeah. And so, that's just for the entry fee, not counting the suit and the tanning and all the other stuff.
We always felt that was double dipping. You know, you're selling tickets to go see the people on the stage. Well, how can you charge the people on the stage then?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so right. We didn't charge the competitors.
Awesome. I think we even actually gave each competitor a free ticket to give to their spouse or friend, right?
I don't remember that part, but.
Okay, yeah. No, we didn't charge, and now it's obscene. I mean, if you have 600 entries, you've got 180 grand right there just in entry fees.
Yeah.
There's no incentive to make a show or sell tickets, and I miss all of that because, I mean, to me, a flat ballroom is no venue for a bodybuilding contest. You know,
I agree. I love when you're in a theater because it's a show. It's like a theater, so it should be in a auditorium.
There should be
like
some drama to it.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. But that's crazy how women's bodybuilding came right at the end of the, or right when Pumping Iron got the interest in bodybuilding and in muscles, and the media was getting involved in bodybuilding. And then women's bodybuilding started, and they were really fascinated with that because they had never seen women with muscles. And the women back then were very sexy with muscles.
But, John, that was also the beginning of women's lib. You know,
yeah.
Corey Everson was my first female house guest. She was an interior designer, and she knew I was an architect and was looking to move to L.A. to pursue her career.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, she was incredible. You know, the world had never seen anything quite like her.
Yeah.
we also started Paris competition. Was that the same time, Ed?
Yeah, that was actually the same. That was Nick Martino, our former partner, who unfortunately died way too early. But he was brilliant. He was a producer, co-producer.
Hollywood Squares.
Yeah. And he in order to sell the show to HBO, he thought we should have a Paris competition, which, frankly, I miss. I think that was one of the better events that they've now done away with.
Yeah, I did. I like that, too.
Six pairs, yeah.
Yeah. It really showed a lot of artistic, you know, expression with the putting the two people together. Yeah.
In fact, back then, HBO didn't want the show without the pairs.
Right.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. American Bodybuilding Championships, I think, is one we did that with. Started with, I think, 80 when Gary Leonard won.
It was when Gary Leonard, that was the last AUNPC show. That was when the last.
That was 1980.
Yeah.
Belknap 181.
In Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, we did that one.
Okay.
And that was with the Universe, Mr. Universe Trials. Yeah.
That was an incredible show. That was one of the best shows ever, I think.
What was the crowd like for that one?
Oh, it was Vegas. You know, it was.
Yeah.
It must have been several thousand people, right, Jim?
I have no recollection. Sorry.
Yeah.
I know
was that Caesar's Palace? You guys?
It wasn't Caesar's Palace. I mean, it was a huge event. I kind of remembered being outdoors, but I remember several thousand people.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
And Ed, you guys got some flack, right? When you had the women come in to train at your gym? Because when you say there was some protests down south or something?
No, there was protests when we were building an aerobic studio. I actually got death threats. Because how could the Mecca have aerobics? But no, we had women. When we moved the gym back to Venice, we built a women's locker room. The gym in Santa Monica did not have an area for women. In fact, Tim, you should talk about how the women's jobs were handled.
What we inherited?
Yeah.
there was a small women's locker room, but it was right next to the manager's office.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was tiny.
Yeah.
With the men's locker room, the chin bar, there was a chin bar next to a men's shower room, which was a gang shower.
Uh-huh.
And women would do chins and look over the wall. There's the guys taking a shower.
That's hilarious.
We inherited stuff.
When you went to Venice, the women were a big part of working out, right? And that was pretty much the first time that was happening.
It was really growing fast. Yeah. I mean, I can remember in Santa Monica, we had Lisa Lyon, Stacey Bentley, Claudia Wilburn, and just Rachel came in.
Yeah.
In 1979 or 80. Just a handful of women that were in there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a couple more that I apologize that I'm forgetting names, but there was less than two dozen women in the gym.
Yeah.
Well, it was the aerobics program that eventually increased the number of women in the gym in Venice. I don't know that we didn't. Do you think we ever hit even 35%?
Probably a little more than that eventually, but yeah, maybe not yet. You're probably right with that.
Some of the gyms I was involved with, John, like Santa Barbara, we hit over 50% female, but that took a long time.
Wow.
But remember, this was back in the day when Monday, Wednesday, and Friday were men, Tuesday, Thursday, women, Saturday was co-ed, and the gyms were closed on Sunday. People can't imagine that now, but that's...
No, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
What gave you the idea to start franchising the gyms?
Well, I think it was Pete... basically, you know, he said, well, you know, I'm traveling all over. They always ask me what Gold's Gym Venice is like, but mm-hmm. I was thinking they can't all come and visit. Why not bring that kind of gym to them? And Tim, you were also saying that we need to bring, you know, real gyms to the people, because back then it was, you had the extremes. You had hardcore, dirty, unfriendly gyms. And then mm-hmm. the other extreme, you had the spas, the Jack LaLanne European Health Spa, you know, almost funny. in today's world. So we pioneered a new kind of gym. The first gym I opened in San Francisco, ironically, had the same equipment as the Gold Gym in Santa Monica. It was designed by George Papasek and Joe Gold, and it was about the same size. And that became an incredible facility for the Bay Area. Hmm. And then we go from there. But we were licensed in operation to begin with, because we didn't have a business plan. We didn't have a manual. It was basically a use of the name for a fee.
Okay. And then
over time, we developed, you know, a Gold Gym University and a little bit more of a program. But I don't think you can quite rubber stamp the gyms, because, you know, the areas mandate a certain difference often. Like the Gold Gym in San Francisco had no babysitting facilities. The members didn't typically have kids, but right now it has a very elaborate daycare for dogs, because so many members apparently have animals. So, Gold Gym Moscow had a full-time coat check person for people's fur coats.
Yeah, right.
So it's just every gym. I love the fact you could go all over and every gym was somewhat different.
Yeah.
Like reflected the area that it was in. I didn't want to, we were not selling hamburgers. I didn't want a cookie cutter approach. Mm-hmm. That we let our gym owners, you know, interpret Gold's Gym for their market.
Yeah. That was John Lloyd that owned that San Francisco one, right?
No, he worked there. He was my first employee.
Okay.
Ironically, yeah, Boston Lloyd's dad was my first employee.
Yeah.
And his son is, I think, a surprise to both of us. John Lloyd worked there with Bob Reese and Neil Spruce and Dick Ferris.
Okay.
Bill Cambert was the one that trained Rich Piana.
Oh, really? Okay.
So it goes back in bodybuilding history there. Yeah. I think I'm leaving out Barry Clothier. Anyway, I had a team of bodybuilders that, Neil wrote up nutrition programs for the members way ahead of its time. And
yeah, I remember that.
You know, the guys were terrific. We were very successful from the get-go.
Let's talk a little bit about the atmosphere of the Mecca of Gold's in the 80s. One of the things I remember you said, Ed, was that you wanted to have the music real loud, and that would create sort of a rock and roll atmosphere.
In writing my book again, I hate to keep repeating that, but I keep thinking, because why was Gold's, why did it have that atmosphere, that energy? And mm-hmm. I think a lot of it was the music. Pete even had this theory that the people fed off each other because of the sound waves or the music. And, you know, when you think about it, what's changed over the past 45 years is the way people listen to music. Now everyone's got something in their ear.
Right.
They're all tuned out. I really think it was the music in the gym that made a huge difference.
Yeah.
When I would take over a gym or buy a gym, the first thing I would do would be to buy a $25,000 sound system.
Wow. Okay.
It was like, how could you have Studio 54 in New York without the music?
Right. Yeah.
It was essential.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense with the camaraderie, because it was like, nobody's had the headphones on, right? Nobody's got the earbuds in back then. So they're all just listening to the music and they're all interacting with each other. And that's what created the atmosphere and the camaraderie, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there was and there was no Instagram or whatever.
You had to go to the gym. Cell phones. Right.
Yeah. You had to go to the gym to see what was going on. You couldn't just go home and watch it, you know, in your bedroom. I'm sure you knew people that would, even if they weren't going to work out, they had to come down to the gym to see what was happening.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was addictive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's what drives me crazy today, because I come from the 80s working out. And, when I see these guys today, it's like everybody's got their headphones on. They're all tuned into themselves. Nobody's interacting with each other. There's no camaraderie. Uh-huh. Like even a lot of guys don't even work out with other people. We used to always have training partners and we always just to bullshit with each other and give each other shit. And, you know, it's like it created the whole atmosphere. It made the whole gym atmosphere fun. And I think a lot of that now is just everybody's in their own world. It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
And John, I don't think in kind of thinking about all the people I knew that were did quite well in the sport. None of them trained alone. He was having a great training partner.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even if you go back to Arnold always said that, you know, whenever you get ready for a show, you always want to make sure you had a good training partner. And back in the 80s, it was always like you knew who was training together. I remember Robbie was training with Mike Flynn for a while. And didn't Mike Christian train with the Barbarian Brothers? It was like everybody had partners, right?
Yeah.
Well, there were no gurus. So,
yeah, that's another thing.
Your training partner was, quote, your guru.
Yeah. Yeah. When these guys got ready for a show, they just did it on their own. So right. Sometimes they would make it. Sometimes they would miss it. But, you know, it was like an individual thing. They were always doing it on their own.
I don't understand the guys today who are advertising, giving training advice, and yet they also have their own guru training them. But I mean,
right.
I suppose I can see that to some degree, but that's a whole new world that never existed.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, Tim, I think it amazes me. I don't know about Tim, but you know, people would say there's no money in bodybuilding, but there are hundreds of thousands of men and women all over the world right now making a very good living training people who they never even see.
Online. Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Would you say, John? I mean, I hear what some of the people are making. I mean, it's a lot of six-figure income.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, Boston Lloyd included.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey Tim, what do you think of the gyms today? The atmosphere with what's going on with, you know, cell phones and things.
Yeah, I was training at a small gym up here in Sandpoint, Idaho,
mm-hmm.
and I was guilty of it myself in the early days. I would just put headphones on because I didn't want to be bothered.
Yeah,
I just wanted to do my thing. But now I'm thinking, and I've gone back to I want to be able to, you know, share my wisdom or whatever I have, you know, to give.
Yeah.
And with the younger people or anybody that, you know, is interested but most of the people, you know, even up here, you know, put the headphones on and listen to music. I think a lot of them are also doing workouts, you know, listening to a training workouts or on them as well. You know, they watch their little videos and then do the exercise and stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So I get both sides. So yeah. I understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just look at those days like at Gold's, you know, in the 80s with a sense of nostalgia, I guess, you know, when everybody was listening to the rock and roll music. I think you made a good point, Ed, with comparing it to Studio 54. You know, it just had that energy and it had the music and the camaraderie. And I think that's what made it the Mecca. That's what made it so great.
Yeah, I don't see anybody up here with a training partner.
You know, really?
Everybody's doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think times change, and for better or for worse, they change.
Yeah. Well, like you said, Ed, maybe we'll go back a little bit to, you know, how things come around again, like with the classic physiques and the smaller gyms, you know, maybe we'll recapture some of that, what we used to have, you know?
It's quite possible. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely think with the classic physiques, I agree with you. I think there is a big need for that. And I think people are maybe getting sick of the mass monsters and they want a more aesthetic physique. I think that's what people would prefer to look like, in other words, you know.
But you know what? It's funny, right? You know, people are bashing the mass monsters and stuff. And mm-hmm. I certainly don't want to look like that, nor would I've ever want to be that way. But I also see where there obviously is a market for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if those people want to have that and look like that, then OK, do that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for those who don't, then, you know, promote classic competitions.
Yeah.
You don't have to promote that aspect.
Right.
You know, but for those who want to, then let them have it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Do your own thing. If you want, you know, natural physiques, you want, you know, the classic physiques.
You're right. Yeah.
Then promote those shows.
Yeah. That is one good thing. Now they have separate divisions for everybody. Where back in the day, it was like all the guys were in one contest. So you'd have a mass monster, but then you'd have a Frank Zane type of physique. And then, there'd always be controversy after the show, like how could Frank Zane beat this mass monster? You know, it was all different opinions, but yeah, now it is separated into different divisions.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't have a problem with that either.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't have that argument with Joe Weider up until the day he died. He thought the fans wanted to see the mass monsters, but I felt it was because those fans are the most vocal, that they yell the loudest, that he got a warped opinion of what people really want to see.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a certain group that wants to see this extreme, But I don't think nowadays it's a majority.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of give credit to the judges back then, because it really had to be a challenge for them, having all these different types of physique in one event. And then they had to pick out who was the best, and posing played a big role in it, you know, and the definition. And they were really going for the symmetry as well. I mean, how do you judge someone like a Muhammad McAway against a Bertel Fox? You know, it was like two totally different types of physiques. Well,
that's where I miss Wayne D'Amelio, because I think he was on the right path to kind of correct that. Mm-hmm. And I think that the judging nowadays is somewhat responsible for where we are, and it's not good.
Yeah, yeah, because the competitor is going to follow with whatever the judging standard is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as they know in advance what the judge is looking for, then they can be accordingly.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, guys. Well, I want to thank you guys for both joining me on the show, Ed Connors and Tim Kimber. It was a pleasure talking to you guys about the old days of Gold's Gym and how it got all started. And, Ed, we wish you the best of luck with your book. We're all looking forward to that.
Thank you.
It had to be a challenge putting that all together. I'm sure it's a huge book.
It's probably the most work I've ever done, but it's been a joy. And Tim actually finished his book long before mine, and I think it's very well written. I'm hoping it'll get published too at some point.
You've got a book too, Tim?
Well, yeah, I wrote one, but I shelved it.
Oh, really?
I felt after I read it, I go, you know, this may be offensive to some people. And I thought, you know what? I need to maybe re-edit this or something, because I don't want to offend anybody. Ed's book is an encyclopedia of bodybuilding.
I've made an effort to sanitize mine, at least this first copy. So,
okay.
John, it was an honor. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Tim. It was a great meeting you, and I'm glad you were able to come on the show. And Ed, it's always great talking to you as well. I really appreciated it. I enjoyed the conversation I had with you guys.
Thank you so much.
Bye, Tim.
Okay, guys. All right.
Bye, Ed.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode. And also thank you to our generous Patreon donors who donate every month to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I could not keep the podcast going without you guys, so thank you very much. If anyone out there is interested in becoming a Patreon donor, you can do so by going to our website, which is thebodybuildinglegendshow.com. And you can, in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for Patreon. I also want to mention that I did do an interview with Dave Palumbo today, and it was about the life of Dave Draper. So you can catch that on YouTube under RX Muscles channel. All right. Without any further ado, I want to read this article that was from the August, September 1980 issue of Iron Man magazine. It's called You Are Dave Draper. It says, "You are Dave Draper. You are one of the greatest bodybuilders the world has ever known. Your face and physique filled countless motion picture and television screens. Photographs of your musculature sold thousands of magazines and launched a myriad of trainees into their bodybuilding activities. You were at the pinnacle of physiquedom. But then there were other challenges to be met, other obstacles to be overcome. You met those challenges, overcame those obstacles, and now you have returned. Your return is the brightest event to dawn on the bodybuilding world in a long while. Proof of this is found in the flood of requests for appearances by you for posing exhibitions, seminars. Proof is to be found in the cheers of thousands who turned out to see you when you were a guest poser at the 1979 Mr. Olympia competition and when you appeared in your recent tour through the United States and Australia. But friendship is important to you, and to have Dave Draper as a friend is to have the very best kind. So when Tony Schettino, who with his partner Angelo Falsetto had opened the finely equipped bodybuilder gym on Elliott Avenue in Middle Village, Queens, mentioned to you that there was going to be a contest for members of the gym, you made time in the midst of your busy schedule to help a friend. You immediately said that you would be there to help publicize and organize the contest and to conduct a seminar. Your appearance changed the contest from a local event to a major happening. They came not only from the New York area, but from many of the neighboring states, and there were many prominent bodybuilders among them. An audience that was several times the originally expected number filled every available space. When the echo of the ovation for your posing display finally faded, The crowd sat enthralled as you spoke about and demonstrated your training methods. Some call it charisma. Others say it is personal magnetism. Whatever the special quality is, you have it. The only sound to be heard during your presentation, other than your voice, was that of pen against paper as copious notes were taken. A question and answer period followed, and by the time it was concluded, October shadows had begun creeping through the windows. Still, no one wanted to leave. And then the applause started, quietly at first, but building steadily until it reached a nearly earth-shattering crescendo. They had come to look, and they had seen a champion. They had come to listen, and they had learned from your proven training knowledge. It was a time they would not soon forget. You talked about your freestyle training method, an innovative and exciting approach toward bodybuilding that could help a trainee avoid the mental staleness that often retards progress. Note, a detailed discussion of the philosophy and implementation of Dave's freestyle training method really requires a seminar by him. Dave can be reached for this purpose at the Santa Cruz Health Book. You explained that you worked on a split routine 6 days a week, doing them from 15 to 20 sets per body part. You stressed the importance of a steady training tempo, about 30 sets per hour, with all the movements being done strictly. You told how you generally worked in superset fashion, often getting further intensification by compounding movements. For example, at the completion of a set of lying tricep extensions, you would go immediately into close grip bench presses. You explained the many variations you used in performing exercises. For example, incline dumbbell curls are done in a 45-degree arc. Flat bench flies are performed so the dumbbells would be brought down and under the bench. You detailed how you would begin each exercise with a medium-heavy poundage and would add weight for each succeeding set until 5 sets were completed. Repetitions would fall into a range of 8 to 12. The target is to work to 95% intensity. Parts of Dave's actual training sessions at the Bodybuilder Gym are included at the end of this article. You discussed your nutritional program and explained how it was centered on a year-round high-protein, low-carbohydrate food intake. A downward caloric adjustment was made for contest preparation. You expressed your views on so many other aspects of training, nutrition, and mental attitude that it would take a small book to include all of them. It can only be hoped that many Ironman readers will be able to attend your seminars. You are Dave Draper. You are one of our true superstars. The world of bodybuilding is better because you are a part of it. Some of Dave's training at the Bodybuilder Gym is listed below. Bench press 225 by 15, 245 by 12, 285 by 10, 295 by 10. Superset with the lat machine pulldowns behind the neck compounded with lat machine pulldowns in front. 160 by 12 by 8, 170 by 12 by 8, 180 by 12 by 8, 190 by 12 by 8, 200 by 12 by 8. Then barbell curl, 135 for 8, 145 for 8, 155 for 8, 165 for 8, 175 for 8. Superset with lying tricep extensions compounded with close grip bench press, 115 by 12 by 10, 125 by 12 by 10, 135 by 12 by 10, 145 by 12 by 10, and 155 by 12 by 10. All right, that is the article. Wow, Dave was very strong. I don't know how old he was in 1980. Let's see, he was born in 1942. So he was close to 40 years old. Man, he was lifting some heavy weights there. 175 on barbell curls, 295 on bench press. Man, impressive. But Dave was a bodybuilder's bodybuilder. He loved training. He wasn't in it for the fame or the money. He was in it just because he loved it. I think Dave started working out when he was about 7 or 8 years old. And by 12 years old, he was hooked and he joined a gym out in New Jersey at a very young age. So, like I said, Dave was a true legend in the sport, a great man, and we are going to miss him. So rest in peace, Dave Draper. And we will be back next week, guys, with another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Check out some of Dave's books on Amazon. And there's also a great seminar that he did with Bill Pearl that is available from GMV Productions. Our friend Wayne Glash has that seminar. I believe you can download. So check out the GMV website. All right, guys, that is it. Stay healthy, enjoy your workouts, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.